Hello.
Hey, happy 50th, buddy.
Happy
Happy
50th.
anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah.
Happy anniversary. Testes. Testes. One,
One, two,
two,
three.
three.
Testies.
Yes, welcome to the 50th episode of Geek Brunch
Yeah, you haven't done 50 things ever, right?
Never. Not in a long time, at least. I passed the 50 mark on anything that I've done. It's been a while.
Your weight.
Yeah, I've been past 50 pounds for quite some time. Definitely I've never done 50 podcasts, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You have to walk me through
It's the same old, same old.
it.
You just move with
You've
the
been there,
flow. I've
done
been
that.
there, yeah.
No, I know. It's the same old, really. I don't know that we have anything too special planned, besides we do have a lot of questions.
Do we? I don't.
Well,
Well, I have
William.
two.
Okay, well, William Purcell,
Posted on yours.
on mine, he asked me like tw 27 questions.
Oh,
No,
shit.
there's a lot of them. There's over 10. So he supplied us.
Good. Thank you, William.
Yeah, he made up for all the other jokers out there. Just kidding. That's how I'm gonna celebrate 50 episodes is
Answering
start.
50 questions.
No, I'm gonna start trashing Why the hell do you listen to this? Oh man, this time I made sure I had my speakers all arranged correctly.
So you had good sound quality.
That my headset was that I was using my headset, not my computer
Yeah.
mic.
That's pretty
So,
cool, though. I felt godlike.
yes.
I felt like in that episode, well, I know you don't watch a lot of Star Trek, but there's a Star Trek movie where I think it's Spock's brother or something becomes godlike. Have you heard of that episode? I think it's the one that people don't like. I think it's five. I really like it. I really do.
Oh, the movies.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of times he's speaking like this godlike voice, and that's what I felt like last episode.
You were brother I.
That's right.
I was ready to omactivate. I was halfway to the bathroom with the clippers, the shaving mohawk on my. Either that or Travis Bickle.
Yeah, we should announce that there, for the Taxi Driver fans, which we have a few, there's a Travis Bickle action, a reaction figure, right?
Yeah, it's actually I just happened to come across it in this month's previews. But that's Funko. They have a line of 3.5 inch retro figures. Basically, it's relevant for the show really, because it's they come in blister pack card packaging, like the old school G.I. Joes and Star Wars figures and stuff.
Except they're
And
not very articulate. I mean, they don't have like good movable joints. It's kind of just a straight line. There's no like knee joint
yeah, they're pretty
or
basic,
elbow
but
joint. It's basically shoulder and groin movement.
well, then they got the important one.
Yeah.
As long as it has groin movement.
Hip movement.
Yeah. Gotta have the hip movement. But
I might get that figure. I'm always tempted with some of those reaction just because some of them are cool. Like, I wanted to get the Eric Draven Crow, and just pick and choose. But man, I am such a freak with things like compulsion,
Yeah.
Like, I kept on. We for example, we just recorded a Valiant podcast, I think on Wednesday, and we were talking about Valiant's inability to like close on their action figures and stuff. In other words, they'll come out with some plush toys, or they'll come out with one XO figure, and now we got the Mini Mates, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not into Mini Mates, you know, I'm not going to, but I got the urge to go to Toys R Us yesterday, and I bought these Mini Mates, and I like can't stop playing with them. I think they're fucking awesome. Like, they really, I mean, for being so damn tiny, they really, you know, you can do a lot with them, man. They can move. You could change heads. Like, Bloodshot comes with three freaking guns and a sword. Exo comes out with like an energy blast, and I don't know. And then Keith last night told me that they had Mini Mates for DC, and I had no fucking clue. And the danger there is there's quite a few of them, and they have a Booster and a Blue Beetle, and I really want that set. And then they also have a Sergeant Rock Blackhawk, and
Nice.
I think that would be like a cool set to have, you know. But they have so many figures, and just another thing. But they don't take up much space. They're tiny.
Yeah, that's one positive. I have I'm trying to think of what they are. They're not Mini Mates. They're a different brand of little mini DC comics. They're about the same size.
Your little flash thing, right?
Yeah, there's I
Yeah.
got the Flash Captain Cold because they come in two packs like the Mini Mates do, and they were at Toys R Us where I got them. Trying to think of what the name of them were, but yeah, I have that one. And I have like there was a Superman Dark Side one combo and a one that was Etrigan and Dr. Fate. And I know there's a Hal Jordan Sinestro one too.
I think that Etrigan Dr. Fate would be awesome.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. But yeah, I know what you mean. I'm always resisting that temptation, and then every once in a while I will succumb and get into something, and sometimes I'm happy, you know, I'm still happy with stuff later on, and then other times like I kind of regret it later.
Yeah. Like, I bought these weird little, they're called Labbits. I don't know if you saw them on my wall.
I saw the picture. Yeah, those
I
things
thought
freak me out.
they look crazy as shit, but somehow they caught my eye. Do you know what I mean? And I think it was the packaging and the logo and the weirdness of them, you know? 'Cause I don't usually gravitate to shit like that. And then I made the mistake of I said, God, I'm gonna try one of those mystery minis vinyl figures. You know, the DC ones where they're in a box and you don't know what it is, and you just pull the box and take, you just pick a box, and I guess there's a way to decode it if you put in the serial number, but I just did it like you're supposed to. You know, I bought a box. I didn't know what it was. And they're pretty awesome. Like, I got a little Martian Manhunter. And it's I think it's like kind of like your Flash, but not quite. Because if I remember, your Flash is like running, isn't it? Or is it movable?
Yeah, the arms and legs are
Yeah, these are not
movable.
movable. They're just vinyl standalone display figures, you know. They're only about an inch tall, you know, they're tiny little things.
Yeah, actually, I did while you were talking, I did figure out what they were. They're mini Mezzets
Oh yeah.
by a company called Mezco.
I think Mezco did a Exo Man of War for like New York Comic Con.
Yeah, so that's what they are. There's a yeah, there's another one. I don't have these, but there was another pack that in the same line where it was Batman Beyond and Cyborg. That was the other one that there was. I think they've made some other ones since then, but yeah, they can be they can be fun, but like you said, it's got to try to pick and choose. Like I was looking in the previews, there's also, in addition to the Travis Bickle one, there's a whole line of Karate Kid ones that they're doing.
Yeah, I
So
saw
I was looking at
those.
those. I'm like, oh man, I should get all of them, the whole set. And but then I was looking at them, and I don't know, I might still get just one of them or two of them or something. I would get the
Miyagi and and Daniel.
yeah, I might just do that, because I was looking at, I mean, I would normally, the first one I would go for is the Elizabeth Shue one,
They
but
have her. They
yeah,
have
but
Elizabeth Shue.
there is one of her character, but she looks like freaking
Yeah, some of those figures don't. Like, I was looking at the. I love Firefly, right? I was
ugly.
looking at the Firefly reaction ones
Yeah.
because it's got the whole line, and I was like, good Lord, some of them just look so bad. I think intentionally, you know? I don't think. I think they're not supposed to look very much like them. Just like these Funko ones and stuff, they're kind of weird. But.
Yeah, they're definitely made to look retro. They're definitely made to look like they came out like maybe in the 80s or something. And some, I mean, some of them are really cool. Like, they're well made and everything like that. But depending on the character, some of them look better than others. Like, I think the men tend to fare better than the women.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason. But yeah, I mean, they have a lot of them. The only ones I've seen in person are the Target has some of the Breaking or the Back to the Future ones.
Yeah.
I've seen those in person, but they, it looks like they have Goonies. There's a horror series of different horrors
Yeah,
you could get.
Michael Myers and Friday the 13th. Yeah, I've actually at Barnes and Noble they carry them, and they got quite a selection. For the first time, we went to Barnes and Noble in a long, long ass time, and I saw a whole bunch of them. But the thing is with me, like I said, sometimes I just purposely stay away because I know what my mentality is.
Right. No, I have to do the same thing. I'll start doing all this research and looking to see, like you were talking about how you were looking at the mini mates and finding out, that there's a lot of them out there for the DC and stuff. And so I'll have something like that where I'll go and I'll start looking at websites that list all of them and seeing which ones are rare, and I'm doing all this research. And then sometimes I just have to like stop myself and back up and,
Slap
like,
yourself.
yeah, stop. It's like, just stop. 'Cause now, I mean, I'm even like, I'm looking now myself at these mini mates. I'm like, oh shit, there's a Jake Eric one.
Oh,
And
yeah. I saw the Jay Garrick and Wildcat, right? I
is
think
that who he comes with? That's
it's a
cool.
two pack,
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I know they always do the two packs. I'm just looking at like a picture that has like a whole bunch of them together, and I spotted him because of his helmet stands out. There's a OMAC one.
Is there really?
The like Infinite Crisis OMAC.
Oh yeah, that one. That one
Just
I don't
not as
need.
exciting.
Yeah. I mean I love the concept. I think it's pretty cool 'cause that is like the satellite, beaming stuff down and assimilating people, kind of like the Borg, I like that concept, and I like the fact that Batman is the one that put that damn satellite up there to begin with. But he fucked up. Batman fucks up every now and then, and then he has to come out of it.
Oh, there's a Gorilla Grodd one that's ex like a large
He
sized.
looks big, yeah.
They made him like a little bit bigger, which is pretty cool.
The part I had trouble looking at, though, like when I Googled the Mini Mates, was, and I think they are kind of retro because I think they come out a while ago. The reason it came out is because I was talking about the Valiant ones, and Keith says I have a Booster and Blue Beetle, and I'm like, what? And then he sent a picture, and I was like, hey, I don't remember these. And I remember a lot of toys coming out and me just turning them down just because they weren't realistic. But I think now that, like, kind of like the figures you had, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm changing a lot. Like, they don't have to be anymore. They just have to be cool looking. I mean, I got stupid ass Labbits, for Christ's sakes. Those are the dumbest looking things I've ever seen. It's weird because they look like some kind of like manga-esque thing, and then they have like this hole in their mouth, and I don't know if like something shoots out of them. I don't want to open the packages because the packaging is what drew me to them in the first place. But it looks like it might shoot something out of its mouth, or you put it in the mouth. I don't know. I have to Google it.
Yeah, the packaging on that Green Lantern one looks like it shoots something out of its mouth.
Yeah, well, all of them do. If you look at the front, you can't see them obviously from the pictures I took. I have them all except for Cyborg. I might go back and get it just so I have a complete set. But I thought some of the choices were weird. Like they put out Red Hood. I thought that was bizarre. And Bane, you know? Like why would they choose Bane over like the Joker? Or why would they choose Red Hood over like a property like Wonder Woman or the Flash? There is no Flash one.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? It's just weird choices, but I like that weirdness. Like, you know, Bane, Red Hood, and Cyborg are kind of, you know, strange choices. When you don't have like the big characters like Flash and Wonder Woman first. If I was to
Yeah.
release them, I would have put Flash and Wonder Woman definitely there. Because the one thing I have learned from Facebook about Wonder Woman stuff is there's crazy collectors of Wonder Woman stuff, just like there is Batman and Superman. I mean, people just buy it. And if I wanted another hobby, I think that's what I would do is collect Wonder Woman stuff because I think like Wonder Woman's awesome. Like Flash is probably my favorite DC character, and it's the character that drew me in to DC in the first place, like hardcore. You know what I mean? It was the character I stuck with. But Wonder Woman is by far my favorite female character. I don't know why. I just love to
Well, it
her iconic costume, especially the like if you throw Wonder Woman in the Garcia Lopez look, I'm suckered in, you know what I mean, immediately. The 70s before the white jumpsuit. But if you threw the white jumpsuit, if you put an action figure out of her in the white jumpsuit, I would jump all over that.
Yeah, the Mini Mates, I think, have been around for a while. And as with Wonder Woman, I think a lot of people, they have that connection to the television show initially that drew them in, you know?
Yeah, just like
And then,
Adam West Batman might have done
yeah.
Batman. Or the Super Friends cartoon, for Christ's sake.
Right.
That's what
I
got me
mean,
into comics in the first place, really.
yeah. There's a lot, I mean, but yeah, there's a lot of reasons to have Wonder Woman as your favorite female character.
Yeah. Times
Cause
have changed a lot, though. Like back in my day, if you saw a cartoon, you'd want to seek out that stuff. Whereas now I think people see cartoons and they want to seek out the video game or the, you know, different other stuff, not take a step back in technology, I guess, and read. I don't.
Yeah, it's hard to say. If we had more information about digital sales, I think it would be interesting to see. But yeah, these Mini Mates are cool. I don't know if I knew there were DC ones or not, or if I just never really looked at them,
I
because I
think I
know.
ignored them because I think they came out from DC Direct or something, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I was like, I don't want those silly figures. Just like those scribble knots, they're goofy looking childlike heroes, but they're almost like an addictive thing. Like I could find myself easily collecting a whole set of those.
Yeah, now that originally is a video game.
Yeah.
Speaking of video games, but yeah, I mean, I've known of Mini Mates for a while, because I remember when they first started like, man, it was a long time ago. They started out with the Marvel ones, and for a little while, I was getting a bunch of the Marvel ones. Back at that time when they first started doing them, but I didn't keep up with them.
I don't know if they've gotten better over time, but man, these ones are like cool as shit. Like they come with so many different things, and they are really movable. Like you can really pose them in some unique positions.
That's cool.
I really like the Bloodshot. Like I think it's amazing.
Did you see that there's did you order where they're having the other ones where
No, I was late to the party because I think it was in the last previews, and
Oh, was
I
it?
haven't
Okay.
placed the new one. And I was like, I'm not gonna get. Matter of fact, I said, you know what? I wish Valiant would do like a G.I. Joe type figure or a Star Wars figure, you know, one of those 6-inch figures, or a DC Direct like. And then it's weird because I'm afraid that they won't come out with any more like. We'll just get Bloodshot and Exo. Even the ones they solicited, the Battle-Worn ones, it's still just Bloodshot and Exo. And I know why they're doing it is because they look very distinctive. Where how would Harada, a guy in a business suit, sell? Do you know what I mean? Or like the Harbinger kids, where they all have those weird Harbinger jackets. You know, it's not like. Iconic looking. I mean, it is iconic looking, but it's the same.
Yeah, they probably have to do. I mean, Rai would be a good one.
But Rai looks so much like Bloodshot.
They
He
definitely really look similar.
is iconic and definitely one of the big ones they should do. Ninjak for sure.
Ninjak was
And
the other one,
I
yeah.
think Eternal Warrior would do fairly decent because he just looks war torn and kind of like a modern day Conan, you know? With a battle axe, that would be pretty badass. And then for a female, put Livewire and Faith, you know? But I hope they continue it because after the show today, I'll probably email DCBS and see if I could get an order of the Mini Mates.
The Battle
Yeah, the
Torn.
Battle Torn ones. See if they have if I could still order it. But that was a
Cool.
lot of toy talk.
So let's transition to our regularly scheduled program.
And we have some questions. Let me get to mine first because there's only two. But Kyle Pettit, who's a listener of a lot of my podcasts, says if you guys could have a writer artist team of one creator from the Bronze Age and one modern age, who would they be and on what title? I
For
would have
me,
Jack Kirby for
oh
sure.
yeah, that's a given.
But then it's hard to like pick who would be a writer for him. Cuz I almost want him to write and draw just himself. Just cuz it's bizarre, but oh man, it would be tough.
What about, I mean, well, there's some writers that are definite Kirby fans
Yeah, there
out there.
are. I wouldn't want somebody like Geoff Johns to write for Kirby because he's a different kind of thought. You know what I mean?
You probably get a lot of nice splash pages, though. Because nowadays, I think Geoff Johns writes like two panels per page most of his issues.
Yeah. I guess I, man, that would be tough. Why don't you pick and then I'll think about who I want to write for Jack Kirby.
Well, my mind immediately went in the opposite direction where the first writer I thought of was Roger Stern.
And do you like are you a Roger Stern fan because of his Avengers or is it something else that you're drawing on?
That was And I don't know that it technically was, he was writing the Avengers. It was really the Bronze Age anymore, but he was definitely a writer in the Bronze Age. So, but yeah, that was the first thing that I read by him was his Avengers run. But I find that anything I read by him, I enjoy.
It's quite a wide range, though, because the Bronze Age is said to run from 1970 to 1985.
Yeah, so
It's almost like pre right before Crisis, right?
right. That's around where they
Yeah.
draw the line, but
You were some of your the books that you came on, I think, were just right after that.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But and then for an artist today, I don't know. I could go with Francisco Francavilla, maybe, or Chris Samnee, someone like that style, I think. And
Kind of similar styles, at least in my
yeah,
opinion.
right. That's why I kind of thought of them together, sort of at the same time. But and then for. I mean, it's tempting for me just to say the Flash, because any creator I like, I would like to see them write the Flash. Oh, how
Man.
about, actually, I would like, how about I'll have them do a new JSA series with the actual, like, JSA Justice Society. Older with the older characters.
I would like to see, I guess, God, writing wise. It's a tough one. I think I'm gonna have to go with Giffen. Keith Giffen with Jack Kirby drawing, and I would like to see him do like a super like a superpowers book again, like with the
Oh, okay.
main characters, because I would like to see a lot more Jack doing his style on mainstream characters, like popular characters, and still have the obscure characters in there, because
Right.
I like both of them. But like a rotating cast of the Justice League, where you have like three core members and the rest are just, hey, we need you, come on, come to the party. And then him just thinking of, I would like Keith to like dialogue it and do stuff, but I want the Kirby weirdness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want these things to be like epic, like Fantastic Four, big, or like New Gods, the things that he thought like outside the box that just seemed really big. 'Cause that's what Justice League is about, really. Is big threats and crazy shit coming to invade Earth. Just
Yeah,
imagine though, like a Jack Kirby Flash. Oh my God.
I'll definitely read that.
Imagine, see, just imagine Jack Kirby drawing the Rogues. Oh fuck. I mean that would just like blow my fucking mind right there.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, I mean, Superpowers is one of the only places he drew Batman, right?
Yeah, superpowers. He got to draw quite a few of the characters because it was based on that toy line. So
Yeah.
that toy line was wonderful. I think, man, I gotta dig those toys out at some point and take some pictures of them because I have a lot of that line. I don't have a complete line. Like there's some that I'm missing, but I have like Plastic Man, and oh, that's such a cool figure. His neck pops out. And then I have like Firestorm. Oh, Firestorm's costume is just so damn awesome to me. A Jack Kirby Firestorm. Oh my God. Think about that. Just him, and then he's drawn. Well, it's funny that I say that because I had Tom Scholey, who draws a lot like Kirby, draw me a. Firestorm and Cyborg, because if you remember, they were part of the Cosmic Heroes Super Friends thing that came after Challenge of the Super Friends. Cyborg was main character, and so was Firestorm, and I had him draw him, and oh God, if I gotta show you this, it's so fucking awesome. He's got like Cyborg, with that attachment on his hand, and he's got Firestorm flying out like in the classic flyout with his arms just both spread, and then there's Professor Stein, his head right above him. Oh, it's so fucking awesome.
Nice.
I have so God, I could think of so many things that I would like to see, but I would love to see him draw the Rogues and the Flash. Oh my Lord.
That's awesome. That'd be pretty cool.
A Captain Boomerang. Oh, Kirby. Yeah, I just love him.
I
Oh,
love how excited you get about just the idea of
yeah.
it.
It would just blow my fucking mind to see all that.
Yeah.
I need to find those superpowers and reread them, man. Oh, there aren't they in an omnibus? They are, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they're in the second Jack Kirby omnibus.
Yeah.
Like,
I need to pull that omnibus out and
yeah,
read.
they did those two that collect all of the like random different stuff that he had done.
Yeah.
That, you know, that series and stuff like that weren't big, like weren't long enough to collect on their own. But they did it in the same line as when they were doing the hard covers of all of his other stuff.
So what JSA kind of thing would you like to see with Roger Stern, Insomni, and
Like a
are we talking modern day or 40s JSA or?
we're talking modern day, but with the older heroes where they're, you know, you have Jay Garrick and Wildcat and Green Lantern.
With the mentor thing happening with the younger generation, or just
Yeah,
man.
but yeah, maybe like a smaller team than they were doing before the New 52, where there was like two teams and there was like 20 people on each team, and you know, maybe like a seven. Like seven characters or something like that. So like
Yeah.
a smaller, like three or four of the mentors and three or four younger legacy characters. And just kind of have a smaller cast and like approach it Avengers style, where like every once in a while you change up one or two characters or something, but keep the cast a little bit smaller, and that'd be sweet.
I want to take your idea a little bit and put a spin on it with my creative team.
Yeah.
I just
You just
can't.
want Jack Kirby to draw everything under the
I
sun.
can't imagine. This would blow my fucking mind. I can't imagine like a JSA like World War II book done by Jack Kirby.
Yeah, that'd be
Holy
awesome.
shit. And I'm talking about I want all this explaining like of the Spear of Destiny. You know how the Nazis used to be able to keep them away with that Spear of Destiny, so it would
Right.
explain how we couldn't just win the war. So all the power, and then I want like him to have like Golden Age Superman and Golden Age Batman on the JSA and Wonder Woman and Jay Garrick and Alan Scott and Wildcat. Oh God Almighty. Imagine seeing a Kirby Wildcat. Oh fuck. I mean, imagine the poses you'd see. Shit.
He would definitely do that character well.
Oh, I can't imagine a Jack. I'm gonna have to write this down for Tom Scholey. I would love to see a Wildcat.
You're gonna
Oh
have to
man.
like, you have to clean yourself off if you don't stop.
It is a good question because it gets you to think.
Yeah.
I love the JSA. I mean, but the thing I haven't read in such a long time, like we've seen the Geoff Johns run, which is like probably the best in my opinion. and the way he handled the legacies and the young guns, I really dug, and all the new incarnations that he introduced. But man, it's been a while since we've had like an all-star squadron, you know, during that
Yeah.
World War II. God, I would love to see that. It's just like New 52 doesn't want to go into World War II for some reason. They want to like modernize, like the Iraq War or Afghanistan. Do you know what I mean? But I would love, I mean, as a fan of 1940s, God, I would love to see that.
Yeah, I don't think
I would be
DC
the only
feels
one
that kind
buying
of
it.
thing will sell
But
right. Yeah, exactly. I don't think DC feels like that kind of thing will sell right now. That's why they're making everybody young and.
I guarantee, I'll guarantee you one thing, that my idea with World War II JSA would sell better than Prez. I guarantee it.
Don't think you're wrong there. But yeah, you never know.
All I want is six issues. Come on, just throw me a bone. You can do this, you know. Forever People, Infinity Man, the Forever People, that doesn't sell for crap. I think it's amazing. The reason I like it, I really like Dan DiDio, because I really think he's got like a Bronze Age, like that was his shit, like the Bronze Age, because he seems to focus on like Infinity Man, Forever People, OMAC, Challengers of the Unknown, you know, stuff like that I n gravitate towards.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was a good question. I got excited. I
Yeah,
have to
you
beat
did.
myself up a little bit. And then I have one more question, and it's from Matthew Guy. He says, "Can you review any more classic Superman family issues? I think I reviewed one already." And the answer is probably yes, because that's one of the things that I'm working on completing is those dollar comics.
Yeah, funnily enough, I had a few orders of back issues lately, and I actually just got a handful of Superman family issues.
Yeah.
Because I had one of them that I had read a while back, and I just like, I don't know, I'm into the anthology style books. I like how you can read a bunch of stories about related characters, because another thing I've been collecting up to read is the Action Comics Weekly.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm kind of in the same mode, is trying to, like, those dollar comics were pretty phenomenal in World's Finest and Adventure Comics and Superman Family and Batman Family. And it's weird with Batman Family, because that one you think would have been the longer running one. But it sounds like what happened historically is that Batman Family was outselling Detective, and they were worried about losing. I think it was Brian Reigate that was talking about this in Comics and History. They were worried about losing the Detective Comics name or something like that, and they actually moved that transition into Detective Comics. So, even though it was still the Batman family, just which is probably the right move. Like it's still kind of, I love the New 52 and all, but God dang, do I miss the stable points of like Action Comics numbering and Detective Comics numbering. I mean, it was getting so high, and I missed it. And that, yeah, like Fantastic Four is going back to it, but stay with it. Don't fucking keep wobbling on it, you know?
Yeah, I kind of hate that even more. Like, if you end the volume and restart the numbering, I kind of hate that. I mean, hate's a strong word. I don't care really that much,
No, I
but
hate it from an archivist's perspective. It's like fucking horrible,
yeah, it's super
because the
annoying.
way you archive books, at least the way I do it, and I have a lot of fucking books. I mean, I should know about this. I do it by volume. So I'll have like Fantastic Four Volume 1,
Right.
and then I got Fantastic Four Volume 2, Volume 3, and so on. And it goes in sequential order. When they fucking do this renaming, it throws the whole thing in this clusterfuck, because
Yeah.
I like want to file it with the latest volume because that's where the story's going along. Do you know what do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I can't file it with the volume one because it would make no sense story-wise. I fucking hate that. And if I was doing the New 52, I mean they have reasons for doing it, but from a archivist perspective and a legacy perspective, even if I revamped it, I think I would have kept Action Comics numbering and Detective Comics numbering. Just
Well,
from that standpoint.
I think in there, I think with what they did, if they're gonna launch all of them as a number one, like I think that that's what they should have done. I mean, I would have preferred they not do the New 52 at all, but like, if I really had my choice, but I understand why they did it. I understand why they made them all number ones, but if you're gonna do it, then stick with it, you know? It's just because you're starting a new volume, and so you can't retroactively go and count those issues as a part of the previous volume. Because it's not like they're just jumping back to, like, say when Marvel does it, they'll count those issues as part of the previous volume. So it'll be like, they'll end at Fantastic Four 550 or whatever it is, and then they'll do, volume 2, issue 1 through 49, and then they'll do 600,
Yeah.
So it's just, I mean, obviously they can do it because they do it, but it's sort of a, if I'm going to gripe about something, that's kind of annoying to me.
Yeah, like Fantastic Four is doing that right now, and I don't know.
Right.
I know what I'm gonna file it as, just because. I don't. If they do that, I like when Marvel did the dual numbering, you know. Or it'll say, well, this is issue 23, but it's got the 600, and it's got the dual numbering. And I would file, I know exactly where to file it. Well, I know I'm going to file it with the latest volume because that's where the story's going, but it just looks fucking weird if you're like 10 years from now, if you're going through the long box, remembering what's going on, and you're, oh, here's 23, and oh, 652. What the fuck? Did I miss 500 and some issues? What the hell just happened?
Yeah, it's annoying. But what can you do? That's all about the money.
Yeah, I would always make stupid decisions because I would do what I wanted, not what I think would make money.
You'd need a business partner.
Yeah. You're right, the numbering was the right thing to do, and it was from a marketing and a sales, what you're going to get on the numbers perspective, I think.
All right, well, I guess we can go through some of these questions from William. Some of these are tough. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to answer some of these. The first one is, what is your favorite collected edition of Retro Comics? And
Collected edition, like hardcover or trade or.
yeah.
Oh, mine's easy.
Okay, go ahead.
OMAC by Jack Kirby, hardcover edition.
I think I'm gonna actually go with Kirby too, because
'Cause they're beautiful collections, god damn it.
well, what we covered here on the show, the Fourth World, there's four of them, but I'm gonna say that that counts as one. But
You're
just the way that,
cheating.
but I like the way that they are collected in publication order. So it makes it really easy. It made it really easy for us to cover on the show, and it makes it really a nice read.
It does, because you're not reading it like, here's Mr. Miracle, right? One through whatever.
Right.
You're reading it as it was published, like in history. That's like amazing.
Yeah,
Because
and that would be the way I'd want to read
they
it.
could have easily have done that. They could have easily said, let's just make a New Gods hardcover or a Jimmy Olsen hardcover, you know? But
Yeah.
no, they did it the right way.
Yeah.
They just put
Yeah.
them all together.
So, and I kind of restricted myself. I mean, I could think about it, but I restricted myself to things that I actually own because, I mean, if it's my favorite and I don't own it, then why is it my favorite? You know?
Yeah.
But, all right. So, this one, I mean, I think is almost impossible. What is your all-time favorite retro comic? So I mean, might as well be like, what's your favorite comic of all time, I guess, unless it's a brand new one. You know,
That one's.
I mean, there's different comics that mean different things to me, you know. I mean, Avengers 273 is one of them because it was one of the first comics I ever read, and I think because of the Masters of Evil and the issue, it was one of the reasons that I like obscure, strange, weird characters that, you know, the lesser known characters of DC and Marvel universes, you know. I like, you know, I have different favorites for different reasons. I don't know if there's one comic that embodies everything for me, you know.
Yeah. That's a tough question, and my answer to that is going to be really weird. Because those that know me know I'm a DC guy. But I think I'm going to go with Defenders number 22, which the reason I'm choosing this is because it got me into the sequential medium, like having to want to get every issue with the Sons of the Serpent story arc. Like I needed to get the next issue, whereas some of the other ones, I would look at the covers, and the cover would draw me to what I would choose, or the interior art as I was thumbing through it, you know. And as a kid, I would be drawn towards like Flash and his rogues, because Flash had like one of the most colorful costumes, you know, red and yellow. And then he had all these like cool rogues, like all these villains, and they were always plastered on the cover. So I like loved them. But I think what Defenders did for me was it got me into like, what's the next issue? What's the next issue? You know? And yeah, that was a bad thing, but it was also a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, similarly, I think that that's one of the reasons I immediately think of Avengers 273 because it had such a indelible impression on me as a kid. And also, you know, my taste has changed a lot in terms of the art that I like from when I was a kid. But so some of the stuff that I liked when I was a kid a lot don't hold up to me as well. But this issue also was written by Roger Stern, and also the art. You know, I've gone back and read this, and it stands up for me. Like, I still really think it's an awesome issue as an adult, and both for the writing and the art. Which John Buscema, this is the John Buscema breakdown with the Tom Palmer finished art, and to this day, I mean, that's one of my still one of my favorite art teams. The two of them together, the Tom Palmer inks. And Tom Palmer is probably my favorite inker. So, yeah, I mean, I think if I had to pick one, that's probably a good one to pick and good reasons to pick one. All right. So there's two that kind of go together. your least favorite hero and least favorite villain. Another kind of tough one. I think there's like a lot of forgettable heroes and villains, but that doesn't seem to me to be like least favorite. But I kind of have a hard time with it because to me, like I kind of ascribe to that philosophy of there's no bad characters.
Yeah, so do I.
You
So
know,
I can't think of any character. Oh, I have one.
it's kind of
My
like just.
least favorite hero is Doctor Who by far. I have that. And my least favorite villain is the Dalek or whatever that robot thing is. So yeah, I thought of something. Yeah.
Okay, I mean, I was thinking of it in terms of superheroes, but
Well, it's Doctor Who has been in the comics.
oh yeah, there's
And
definitely a history.
the only
Yeah.
reason that I bought those Marvel Spotlight or whatever Marvel features was for completism, you know. I don't like the character. My dad loves them and forced me to watch that crap. Maybe that's why I don't like it to this day, but
Yeah, maybe.
he didn't force me. He didn't say, "Sit down and watch this." But what else was I gonna do? I was in the living room and it was on. He didn't like tie me to a chair.
Right.
And then I've like throughout podcasting, people say, "Go watch this doctor," and then I try it and I don't like it. And then go watch this doctor, I try it and I don't like it. So yeah, I don't like it. And I'm glad. I am gonna say that I'm glad that people love Doctor Who. It's just not my cuppa.
Sure. I mean, you're not trying to
Yeah.
take anything away from anybody. That's why, I mean, I like Doctor Who, but I never recommend it to you because I know that you've been there and tried that, you know. And it doesn't bother me that you don't like it, you know. It makes me laugh sometimes, like when people
Like to
I don't know,
write
most of the time,
about
yeah, or
it.
when people or when, like, I don't know, most of the time somebody shits on something that I like, it makes me laugh more than pisses me off. I mean, if I can tell they're just kind of joking around a bit, you know.
Yeah.
And they're not really just being an asshole. I can take
I
it.
still can't understand people that don't love Gotham. Oh my God, I think that move that show's like perfect. I just can't comprehend it. But you do you have any?
Nothing's coming to my mind. I mean, I'll see if I think of something. If something occurs to me, I'll go back to it. But I just don't have a lot of.
Properties that you don't like.
Yeah. I'll think about it because I feel like there is. I do have something like you do where, like with that you're with Doctor Who. I think there's a property, but I can't think of it right now. I'll have to. We can move on, and if it occurs to me, I'll mention it. Which do you prefer, retro or current comics, and why? I mean, this is a no-brainer for me. I mean, it's when it comes to superhero comics, I do like the retro better. I kind of there's certain changes. I mean, I do enjoy that there's an increasing emphasis on like female characters and female creators and stuff. Like, that's a positive change in my mind, and I fully support that. And I don't want to go back in terms of that, but as far as like stylistically, I enjoy retro better. But I do also enjoy like the wealth of indie comics that there are nowadays, and like all the different things that Image is cranking out and stuff. So I love both, but if I had to choose one or the other, I would choose to read my old comics.
I choose comics. I don't have a favorite. I just as long as I have comics, I'm fine. I like having the variety. That way my if my mood changes, I could go back and read something old, or I could read something new, or I could go Golden Age and read something from there. I like it all. So
But what if, like, if
I
you.
think that what comes, that's why I love comics, is I could switch.
Yeah.
I don't want to like I don't want to limit myself to say, oh, I could go read old XO, but I can't read new XO. You know, I want to be able to read Bronze Age Superman and Silver Age Superman and current Superman. And I'm not going to answer that question. I refuse. I'm
Even if you
not going
can.
to pick favorites because I have favorites from every decade.
Yeah.
If I could, if I had to pick one thing, I'd pick Kirby. Bronze Age Kirby. If I had, if you absolutely had to say, what collection would you take with you, and you can only take that with you, then I would take my New Gods and Fourth World hardcovers and OMAC and Commandy, and I'd sit on my desert island and just read them over and over and over again.
All right, so I'm gonna take that as an answer for retro comics. That's how I'm interpreting your answer.
Yeah, but it's angry. It's an angry retro.
With protest.
Yeah. Don't make me choose. That's like choosing your own kid. Which kid do you love more?
I think most parents have a secret answer to that, though they just don't want to say it. Like, for example, I mean, I know I'm my parents' favorite, but I understand that they don't want
At least you think.
to.
It's good to think that.
No, I don't really think that, Jen, if you're listening. Here we go. How do you feel? This is funny. How do you feel when you realize that you have become a voice in the culture you represent? I guess that one's for you, because I'm not a voice in in any culture.
I don't think I'm a popular voice in the culture.
You don't think so?
No, or a well-known voice. I think I have a really small cult following, you know, like where there's people that like to hear me, but I don't think I'm like a David Price or any of those Geek Speak guys or anything. I just think people know me as a guy that just loves comics. I love comics, and that's what I do. And I don't consider myself better than anybody else, or better at discussing comics. I just like people to be excited about comics. That's all I like. I like when people are, I read this and it's exciting. Even if it's like Doctor Who, I like to hear positive stuff. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I'll generally navigate to the properties that I like or the discussions that I like, but I just like excitement about the medium that I love so much. But I don't think I'm a voice. Like Daryl's a voice. You know, like Vince and David Price and some of them other guys, they're a voice, I think. Like, you know, people will listen to them or whatever, but I'm just a dude that records himself.
Well, you've been at it for almost 10 years, though. That's a long
Yeah,
time to
it's a long time.
podcasting. And well, and what you said about what you like to do and what you enjoy. I mean, I think that that's before we were friends. I think that's why I gravitated towards your podcasting and started listening to all your shows, was because you. Like, even like how you were freaking out about Kirby earlier, that's I've always enjoyed when people are excited and enthusiastic about something, you know? I mean, even if I'm not into it, I've always enjoyed hearing about people talk about their hobbies and things that they're into, because it's interesting to hear somebody talk about something they're passionate about, even if it's not something I'm passionate about, you know?
I'm the
And
same way. And if
but
somebody's really excited, like, and I can feel it, and I can feel the excitement, it draws me to that property. Do you know what I mean? With some exceptions, but for the most part, like if somebody is digging something or some book, I'll at least go try it to see if I'm gonna get to that level of excitement. And chances are, the probability of somebody's excited at something, I'm already reading it. It's a high probability.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's my motivation in podcasting is I've always also enjoyed if I'm excited about something, I like to tell people about it, you know? I
Yeah.
mean, it goes all the way back to when I was a kid and I would tell my parents about a book I was reading or whatever the case might be, or a movie or something that I watched. I've always enjoyed telling people about things that I'm excited about. So this is kind of connected to the retro or the question that you didn't like, but after reading both current and retro comics, do you prefer a style of words and pictures or a more art-driven style?
Words and pictures.
Yeah, if that's same answer for me too. I like a combination of the two.
Yeah, because comics are both.
Yeah, I think that's what makes. I mean, comics aren't just a aren't it's they're not, you know, a comic in my mind's not 22 pages of pinups with a couple word balloons here and there, you know. So I mean, I think that's one of the when I was talking earlier about preferring the style of retro comics, I think that's why I sort of gravitate towards. I mean, for me, it's not. I mean, it's not because they're better. It's just. I mean, you're very impressionable when you're a child, and the first comics I read were 80s comics, and so I like comics from all eras. But there's always gonna be a part of me who like there's a has like a soft spot for like early 80s comics. Late 70s, early 80s comics, because that's what first opened my mind to comics, you know. So there's always, I'm always gonna have a soft spot for that sort of style. Because the balance over the years has shifted one way or the other, you know, sometime. And so where the balance was kind of at that point, is always going to appeal to me to some extent, I think, because of that.
Yeah. That one wasn't a controversial to me.
Yeah, I guess that's connected, but a different
Well,
question.
if you prefer one over the other, like I could see that, but to me comics are a 50-50 kind of thing. It's got to have both. The story to me, whether it's told in pictures or words, it's probably the most important. Like, does the story or the characters get me interested in it? But it's usually some of the best comics are both, or else I would just go read a novel, or I would go just examine art. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'd go to an art museum and become an art snob, where I just look at all the art and all the curves and know it. I like looking at different styles in comics. I like when they work with the words. Like it's such a weird combination, because you could like take some artists and put them with some writers, and it just doesn't work. Do you know what I'm saying? And they could both be great at their craft. It's like to make a good comic, you have to like mix and match the best teams for whatever you're writing. Like you're saying, like a Som, you know, Frank Avila Somni, artist, it will work definitely different on a different book, and it'll have a different feel than like a George Perez or Todd McFarlane, you know, issue. So yeah, it just depends on, like, there's some artists that I would say, oh my God, I would love to see him on this. And then they get put on something, and I'm not that crazy about it, because it's just the writer isn't telling the story that the artist wants to draw, or at least that's the way it seems to me. When they're both working like in unison, that's when the comic looks the best to me, or at least when I feel it that they're working in unison.
Agreed. What did you think of the Comics Code Authority? Should it return? I mean, I think it was sort of a necessity at the time that they did it. So they decided to police themselves so that they weren't policed by an outside authority. Because they knew if they didn't do it
The
themselves, that
government would do it
the
for
government
them.
would do it. So, but I think
They'd
I
have
don't
their
th
own FCC kind of thing.
yeah I mean, I don't think it should return. And like, because I'm definitely not into that type of thing. I think that it was so unnecessary for a long time before it actually totally went away. I mean, I think it was just kind of a joke for a while, but I think it was the necessity at the time that it started. I don't think that it was I don't think it was great that it happened, but due to the
For
circumstances,
the
I think
reasons that it happened,
they didn't really have a
and
choice.
I don't think it's even pertinent now because comics are not, their kids don't want them. I hate to say it, but it's adults and old fuckers that want them. Kids go buy them a video game and they're perfectly happy, or take them to a movie of Avengers. There's going to be exceptions, yeah, but it's, I don't think it's, for one thing, they've priced themselves out of kids' range. $4 for 20 pages for a kid is a little pricey.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the
It
I
has to
think
have
the
a well-to-do parents that'll get them into a hobby that's this expensive. And
Yeah.
also monitor. It's kind of like on the parents nowadays because of the lack of the Comics Code. But even the Comics Code, there's still some questionable things that were allowed through there. That could, because a parent's judgment is a parent's judgment. It's such, why should you levy it on some company to do it? Like, if they stamp something all ages, I imagine that's safe for a kid.
Yeah, I think it should be up to the parents, and you can offer guidelines, but like you said, as a parent, you're just dependent on those guidelines, then you're not really doing anything, like you would just say, oh, okay, well, that's PG-13, so not that they make PG-13 movies anymore, really, but it seems like, if you just see, okay, well, that's good, we're good to go, and you have no idea of the content. Or there might be an R-rated movie that is okay, just depending on what the content is, But anyways,
I think it
what do we
hindered
know, though?
creativity, but
We need Bill Bohmer here if we're going to talk more about parenting.
yeah, he's got the he got that down.
He's the one that wrote the books on it, so.
Stop fucking with my internet.
You can have two Cheez-Its.
That's right.
All right. What do you think of the Marvel hype machine in the retro years versus today?
It's very
I don't
different.
know.
The hype machine back then was Stanley's soapbox.
Yeah.
So it was basically reading the back matter of every comic book and being part of the comic book. Right now it's multimedia.
Yeah.
Hype machine has more power. The hype machine doesn't have to be told through the comic book. It could be on TV, it could be on the internet, like on Newsarama. To hype something. Back then, it was all ads and comic books. That's what you read, right?
Yeah, and I think it was also the big thing was the bulletin, creating this kind of myth of a bunch of happy creators all working together in the same spot, and
And you're part of it. You're come join us.
and nowadays it's more of just focusing on the characters and the brands and putting the brands out there, and
It's all about merchandising and selling the intellectual property to multimedia.
So it's changed a lot. I'm not sure where this one's coming from, but was Spider-Man a Republican or a Democrat? He's using the past tense, so I don't know if he's talking about back in the day, but
Retro.
yeah, I mean my instinctual answer is Democrat, but I don't know if he has been reading old Amazing Spider-Man lately, and
Yeah, changing it. Yeah, I don't know.
it's not fresh in my mind, really. It's been a while since I've read old Spider-Man.
Like some characters, like Ollie and Carter Hall, and like they had that comic book in the 90s or the 2000s called DC Decisions, and you could kind of see who was falling in what political party. I don't know if you remember that, but. It was kind of funny, but
Kind of, yeah.
I if I had to guess, I would say Democrat.
Yeah, me too.
I'd say Reed Richards is a Republican. Tony Stark would be a Republican. I don't know.
It's interesting to kind of, I mean, it's, for some characters it depends on the era, and
And
who's
who's
writing.
writing them?
Yeah, exactly. Because one of the reasons that Green Arrow now has that distinction or association, is because Denny O'Neil took him in that direction,
Yeah. You know who would be tough? At least I think so. Is Batman. Because he. The way he acts and what he does almost says Democrat, but he is part of that elite. So, man, that would be a tough one.
I think that's part of
I think there's
the.
ambiguous. He's his own party. He's Batman.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons you have so many interpretations of the character. And over the years, since the 40s, you've had so many different Batmans,
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons I find Captain America interesting, because that's one where you a lot of times we'll see the effect of who's writing it, on the character. And they, because of the character's identity, you do get a lot of storylines that have to deal with politics and American government and stuff, and how Captain America chooses to interact with that.
Yeah.
Okay, two more. What is your favorite advertisement in a retro comic? Man, that's another tough one.
I used to love those DC ones when they had the DC explosion. That would get me excited where they had the different tiers. Like it would say, "Oh, here's your fantasy characters," and have like Warlord, Tor, Beowulf, and all those characters. And here's your sci-fi characters, and here's your superheroes. You know, it'd have different layers to say, "Hey, we're doing all this." Those ads were just so explosive, you know, and showing the diversity of all the characters, and you could see what you wanted to gravitate towards, you know. I dug those a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy looking at them when I read through older comics nowadays. So I think I enjoy ads more in retrospect, not so much when I was a kid.
Ads today suck. The ad, there is
Oh
none.
yeah.
Like you could read a retro comic and you get a sense of the time, like what
Right.
kind of toys were out, what kind of video games were out, what did you have a cardboard submarine that would shoot cardboard bullets, or do you have a box of soldiers that have 1,000 pieces and they're thin? You think that they're 3D detail and they're really like paper thin. Those ads are fun. And then you had like the 3D see-through, and you'd have those goggles that you put on, and you'd be able to see a girl's panties, and they would show it in the ad, and you're like, "Oh, I gotta get some of these goggles."
Yeah, I need to wear these at school.
The ads are. That is what's more fun, I think, with the retro. Like, if you were to compare comics today and comics of yesteryear, is that when you read a yesteryear comic and it's not in trade, because trade doesn't have that, you really get a sense of the time, of where you were, what a lot of the mind was. And then you had letters pages, too, that kind of told you what people were thinking.
Yeah, I really like the letters pages.
I enjoy it's great.
They need to include those more. I did hear someone talking about the Uncanny X-Men omnibus that actually included them, I think.
They do the those Marvel fat ones. A lot of them include the letters pages.
That's
They
awesome.
don't have the ads, but they have the letters pages, so you can read the letters pages.
Yeah, I wish they would do that more. All right, last one. If you were going to start a newbie reading comics, would you start them on retro or current comics, and why?
Current by a long shot, because the newbie is a product of their time, like what's current. And I think, like, as they become fans, then they can go back and read the past. But just like when we got into comics, you normally went to the spinner rack and got what was current. You didn't usually go to the back issues unless you happened to find a book old bookstore or something that sold back issues, or you wanted to send away for them in a catalog that was printed on the page. So I would definitely say new comics, and depending on the person, like, you try to find out what they liked. Do they like realism versus superheroes, or do they like science fiction? And
Yeah, I mean, I think in most cases, I think it would be a rare exception where you'd start somebody on Retro Comics.
because it's a time jump for them, you don't want them to have to think back in that time if they're a newbie, unless they're like some kind of like historical buff that wants to know about like 1940s or 50s comic books, and they never read comic books and they want to write a thesis or something.
Or for some reason they're already into like retros in some other genre, like they're really into retro TV or something like that. And they just haven't gotten into comics yet and they're looking for recommendations. But I mean, when I was a kid, especially when you're talking about kids, if you're talking about newbies that are kids, and most of the time that's going to be the case. And when I know when I was a kid, and I think it's true for most kids, and you with anything you have exceptions here and there, but when I was a kid, I had no interest in the old stuff. I wanted the new stuff, I wanted to read the new
Same
stuff.
here. A good example is I had talked about in previous episodes about trading comics, and God dang it, did I trade away a fortune, because they got in my hands and I didn't want to read this Steranko Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I didn't want to read a Jack Kirby Fantastic Four. I wanted to read a modern day Jerry Conway comic book. You know what I mean? And those other old ones would get into my hands, and I was like, "What is this? It feels different. Something's not right." And then I'd read a new one, and I was like, "Oh, this is my story as a kid." But I think it's even that way, like as an adult. Like, you don't want to throw a Bronze Age comic book at an adult as a newbie. You want to throw in some like, "Hey, here's a saga," or "Here's a walking. Do you like Walking Dead? You know, try this." Or do you like the Flash TV show? Then go try this Geoff Johns Omnibus or something. You might like it.
Yeah, 'cause I know when I was a kid, I could go back a little bit. Like I remember, I think it must have been a trade where I read the Kraven's Last Hunt story, which was a little bit before I started, but not by much. The style wasn't very different. And it was also because I was such a huge Spider-Man fan, so the character really appealed to me anyway. But yeah. All right. An hour and 20 minutes in and talking about
But
questions.
it was a good
Yeah.
questions for anniversary, which we don't get a lot of questions, so it was good discussion stuff.
Yeah, it brought up a lot of
A lot
more
of new ones
general
too.
topics
A
and
lot,
stuff.
sometimes we get a lot of the same questions, but these were definitely some stuff we didn't cover before. Especially the
Yes, thank you.
Republican ones.
Yeah, that's
Politics
interesting.
is one thing I don't like to get into. I try to avoid that at all possibility.
Yes, that's one of those tips, right? Like, don't talk about politics or
Politics or
religion.
religion.
Yeah. Unless you know somebody pretty well. All right. So, a lot of those questions related to comics. Do you want to shift gears, or you want to
Yeah,
stay with comics?
let's kill this Buck Rogers.
Okay, well, episode 5 of season 2, if we're going to count,
The
because the last,
two-parters, yeah.
yeah, they were two-parters. It's just a single episode story called The Guardians from January 29th, 1981. And this really kind of reminded me of a Star Trek episode. I don't know why, but just introducing this strange.
All of these episodes remind me of like the Star Trek premise. I
I
don't
feel
think
like.
this one was executed very well, though.
Yeah, I mean,
I know,
most of it.
I know its intent. It's like Pandora's box. You open up this box, and the only change of it is it needed to get from one safe zone to another safe zone, essentially.
Right. Yeah, it's I did think it was interesting the way the episode just kind of started out with Hawk and Buck already on a mission. But they come across this dying man, and he has a jade box that glows.
But that was so weird. It's like this guy was been waiting 500 years for Buck Rogers to arrive, like, and take this box from him to hand it off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird setup. But and the box has weird effect on people if they touch it or open it or whatever. It seems to be cursed or something before they ever get it back to the searcher. Buck touches it and ends up having this flashback to when he was still on Earth. He thinks he's at home on leave from the military, and his mom's there, played by actress Rosemary DeCamp.
I did like that flashback scene.
Yeah, for some reason I kind of like when they do the flashbacks for Buck.
Yeah, I liked it 'cause it had like this weird feeling like something's not right. Like Martian Chronicles, like you enter this area that feels like home, but it's not. Like something's not right.
Yeah, and yeah, it's not like a dream. He still feels like he's Buck from like the present moment in the from the 25th century. So he's weirded out by the whole situation. He's asking his mom, like, "Don't I look different to you?" Or, she thinks he's just like spent too long out in the sun or something. But eventually they get the box back to the ship, and it starts having a weird effect on different people on the ship. Like Asimov, he thinks it's all a joke and opens it, and all of a sudden it looks like everybody in the room is dying of starvation. They all have like black makeup under their eyes, and Wilma, she sees a blind woman in one of the corridors, and it turns out to be herself, like a blind version of herself. And then later in the episode, there's an explosion and it briefly blinds her.
Yeah. Hawk, yeah, his old lover, and my favorite was the Admiral touches the box, and everybody gets famished, like they're starving to death. And it's funny because you have some people that are really like made up, like to look like zombies, or like that they're getting really hungry and getting relaxed, and some people that are not in the background, and they're just sitting there. That was the best one for me. I was like, that was cool. Well,
The hawk.
Bucks was the most serious one.
And Barbara Luna reprises her role as Corey, Hawk's wife, because he thinks he sees her. So that actress comes back for this episode. But yeah, I mean, altogether, this episode didn't make a huge impression on me. I didn't really take a lot of notes on it.
It was my, I'll be honest with you, it was my least favorite episode. And I don't know what it was, because it had some interesting things about it, you know? But man, it just seemed to last forever. And I wasn't feeling it. You know which character I really think they've drug into the dirt is Wilma's, from season one to season two. I don't find her nearly as sexy or appealing or interesting as I did in season one. Buck's a little more serious, but I still kind of enjoy his character. I enjoy his I kind of enjoy Hawk, you know. He's somewhat like always out on an adventure and doing stuff. The Dr. Goodfellow or whatever his name is, he annoys me to no end. I don't have anything against him. It just his character, the way he's written, is just. I like that stuck-up asshole droid.
Yeah,
He,
he's
I do
funny.
enjoy him, and Dr. Goodfellow did have a good one-liner at the end. He put him down, the robot. I don't remember exactly what he said.
Me neither.
Oh, he called him an idiot, Barb said. Barb remembered.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think Crichton or Hawk are bad additions. And that's kind of the funny thing is that's the one thing I kept hearing about the season. Before we started watching it was about Hawk, how they introduced this character that's a bird man and he just has like a hawk helmet on his head and stuff, but I don't mind him. But yeah, I think I mean we've talked the last couple episodes about the changes to the show, and I think that this time, but we've the episodes we've talked about so far have all had things that were still interesting about them, and I think the problem with this episode is that there was nothing to distract you from thinking about the stuff that's changed about the show. So it really
Yeah,
stood out.
I agree with you. There was just something about it to it, that shocked us. You know, like said, okay, this is different and not as entertaining. It had some good, like I did like the Buck flashback scene with his mom.
Yeah.
And I liked that one guy who lost his wife or whoever who was in the cadet school, or I don't know if his wife or his daughter, but he just flipped out on the bridge. And it had the Allstate guy. Let's point that out as one of the actors, the president
Oh, right.
24.
Yeah, Dennis Haysbert
Yeah.
is his name.
He
You
was the
know,
helmsman.
yeah, he's known for the Allstate and obviously for the Allstate commercials and a lot of TV shows. 24. He's in Major League and
Oh, he was Serrano. That's right. That he was in Major League, right?
yeah, Pedro Serrano.
Pedro Serrano. I
Yeah.
forgot about it. He had his head shaved for that role. He would shave.
Yeah.
He was the voodoo guy, right? He had like chickens in his fucking locker.
I think so, yeah.
That's awesome.
It's been a really long time since I saw that.
I
But
love
yeah,
that.
he's been on tons of stuff.
That's such a bizarre movie. I love it. The
He
Cleveland Indians.
done a lot of voice acting and stuff too.
Yeah, he's got that voice that is good for like documentaries or Allstate commercials. He's got a really good voice, like a James Earl Jones type voice, you know.
Yeah, it's got a real rich quality to it. He's done, and because of that, he's done some animated work. Like, he did the voice of Kilowog a couple times in Justice League. But, so, I don't know. But, and Twiggy, I mean, why, of all things, why would you write that dude out of the show?
Yeah, the relationship between Twiggy and Buck is gone.
'Cause Twiggy's pretty much gone. I mean, he hasn't done
Yeah.
anything. But
Crichton is more prominent than Twiggy. You'll see like two scenes and Twiggy's just in the background, just standing there.
yeah.
Like why do you, he's just like a prop. I don't even think anybody notices him. He's just
Yeah.
there.
So I know we got like two more episodes, and then in the eighth episode of the season is when Mel Blanc comes back as his voice. So maybe I'm hoping that also means that he also they,
The characterization comes back a little bit, I
yeah, that they
hope.
start using the character some more again. So, I mean, I'm not, I don't think every episode for the rest of the season is going to be like this one. I'm optimistic still for some of the upcoming episodes, just kind of glancing ahead, but.
Yeah, me and Barb watched it together, and we were like shaking our heads, like this episode is not good. I don't think she
Yeah.
liked the last one either, but I enjoyed the blue little midget and the walking in the desert. I kind of like that one.
Yeah.
This one, it's like there. I was trying to grasp for some positive stuff, and it was harder. It just didn't seem. It seemed like a real dull episode.
Yeah, my attention's wandering a lot.
Yeah, same here.
It's tough to concentrate on it. But we'll see what we get next time, I guess.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's not a whole lot to say about this one this time, I guess. But that's okay.
All we
We had
can
a lot
hope
of good
for is
questions.
the Mark of Surian is a better episode.
Yeah. So, should we go into some comics then?
Sure.
Do you want to start out or
Yeah, I'll
want me to?
start out with my least favorite and then work towards my favorite.
Okay.
I didn't do anything special. I stayed the course for this episode. Like, what do I feel like reading? I picked up one of my world's finest. I've been working on my world's finest collection. It's World's Finest 232, dated in 1975, September 1975. And it's called The Dream Bomb, and it's written by Bob Haney. Some people call him Crazy Haney because he comes up with some crazy ideas. And art by Dick Dillon and John Callanan. And the art is just fine, and the story, this kind of felt like Buck Rogers a little bit. It had some good ideas, but it just didn't execute very well. It is like I See Dead People issue. Batman and Superman find out that they're having these weird dreams with this guy called Chang Chi, not Shang-Chi, the kung fu guy at Marvel, but Chang-Chi. They keep seeing visions of him, and they also keep seeing visions of dead people, and they also have like horrible nightmares, like they're waking out of bed and they're like falling out of their beds and they're like, "Ah, I can't take it." And they don't know what's going on. They're having a hard time telling dreams from reality, and they go to a dream doctor and he's tells them that there's a lot of people that go there for dream therapy and they can no longer dream, so people are stopping to lose dreams. So what's happening is a weird premise. It's like the dream energy is causing the dead people to come back to life and basically cross over. And it has an interesting concept in the fact that what if the dead started to come, not from a zombie perspective, but what if the dead started to come alive and consume all of Earth's resources, then everybody would die. And then it would be recursive, it'd be exponential, because then you die and then come back and you just like overpopulate. That concept I actually thought was pretty badass. But they team up with this Shang-Chi, and he seems like a good guy, but and he is kind of a good guy. Like they don't portray him as a bad guy, but they are bringing dead people over, and they have to stop it. And Superman ends up destroying this bridge, and it has to do with some shadow leopard, which really confused me. But yeah, it was a okay read. I enjoyed it. It just wasn't like the best World's Finest that I ever read. So, and there's a cool ad for the first issue of Man Bat. If you guys remember, Man Bat only like ran two issues, but it was Jerry Conway, Steve Ditko, and Al Milgrom. So it was a cool creative team. And at the bottom of the ad, it says, "And watch out for more of Conway's Corner." They have All Star Comics, which I guess he took over for Kupperberg or whoever was writing it at the time, and Blackhawk, and Codename Assassin, which I think Codename Assassin just showed up in first issue special. So it's kind of a cool retro ad. And then they had an ad in the back for 132 Roman soldiers, and this one I didn't get. I got the Civil War one, and I have the army soldiers, but I never got the Roman soldiers. I wonder if it was a good one, because it came with four generals, mounted generals, 24 cavalrymen with spears and armors, four cavalrymen with banners, 16 spearmen with shields, 16 archers with bows, 16 slingers, four chariots with drivers, working catapults, 16 pieces of ammunition for catapult, 24 foot soldiers with broadswords and shields, and four bugglers. I don't know what a buggler is. Do you know what a buggler is? Bugler. Oh, what am I saying? Thank you, Barb. It's spelled like bugglers. Love my wife.
She's
That
probably
makes
shaking her
sense
head
because
right now.
the Romans would bugle, I guess. They blow in the horn. What's a bugler?
A bugler is what the Roman soldiers did at night when they were lonely.
So that was World's
That's
Finest
funny.
232 Dream Bomb.
I don't know what you would do without Barb.
I don't know either.
You'd be in trouble.
I would.
All right, well, you were mentioning Jerry Conway, and I had told you that I was going to try to read all issue number 50s, and I ended up only reading one, and then in the process of looking for other ones to read, I didn't come across any quick enough and just decided to read what I felt like reading. But I did read one issue 50, and it was written by oh no, it wasn't. Actually, I'm confused. It wasn't written by Jerry Conway. The reason I was, but I'll explain the reason I was thinking of him, because it's Commandy issue number 50, and it this is so about 10 issues after Jack Kirby was off the book, and the last couple issues that Kirby penciled were written by Jerry Conway. And that's why I was thinking of him. But this issue was written by Denny O'Neil, actually. And it has art by Dick Ayers, Alfredo Alcala, and Manuel Awad, AUAD. So it's kind of interesting, though, because
Oh, that's a fucking awesome cover. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
no, I mean, this is like,
It's
I guess
OMAC
this is my
Commandy.
anniversary gift to you,
Yeah,
covering this
thank you.
issue. Because yeah, the cover is changing, 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 and Commandy becomes a one-man army corps, and you see Commandy changing from his usual look to a older looking Commandy with his blonde hair is turned into a mohawk, and he's got the Brother Eye symbol on his bare chest, and he's punching Ben Boxer. The Ben kind of almost, it almost looks like he's punching Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, it does look like Dr. I would have never guessed that's Ben Boxer.
Yeah, I know from reading the issue pretty much, but it's interesting that Dick Ayers is the penciler on this issue, because of course he inked so much Kirby back in the Silver Age, Fantastic Four and stuff. But so yes, this is a story called The Death Worshippers, and Commandy's with a at this point with a bunch of different characters that he met and traveled with at different times through Kirby's run on the title. Dr. Caenus is there, Ben Boxer, Aarna, who is a character that was introduced just right at the end of Kirby's run on the title, and as well as Pyra, who was introduced a little bit before him, or her. I mean, Pyra, she's like a fireball in female form, basically. And then there's Spirit, who is the like lookalike of Flower, the Commandy's sort of girlfriend. It's her sister that looks pretty much identical to her. So they're all there, and it sort of picks up from what's been going on in previous issues, where they've just cured Dr. Caenus from like a killing madness, and they're trying to, with Pyra doing most of the work. She's got a machine that she's strapping Commandy into to sort of cure him in the same way, but unfortunately, she forgot to change the settings on the calibrate the machine to a human as opposed to a canine, and it has this unexpected effect on Commandy, where he, all of a sudden he's even crazier, completely savage, and he has the appearance, as he does on the cover, where he's still in just like his blue shorts and boots, but he's got a mohawk, and he's got this eye Brother Eye symbol on his chest. So he just goes crazy and starts attacking everyone. And Ben Boxer, he's been having a problem where he, whenever he transforms, when he uses his Cyclo Heart to transform into metal, it makes him weaker every time. But they have no way of subduing Commandy, Commandomech, maybe you call him, without using his power. So he goes ahead and uses it, and they end up fighting their way out of the spaceship. I think it's Pyra's spaceship that they're traveling in, and they end up taking the battle out into the sort of like tropical area that they're floating over top of. But Ben Boxer, he remembers stories that he heard about the time before the great disaster. There was an unstable political situation, he says, and that there was that they created that they took a man, Buddy Blank, and gave him superpowers. And so we get, an explanation of Omex, the Omex series. Basically, he talks about how he was controlled by a device called Brother Eye that orbited around the Earth. And they're like, well, what does that have to do with Commandy? And Pyra explains that it somehow caused him to revert back about two generations, and that Omak must have been Commandy's grandfather. So while this is going on, Commandy is taken off. That's how they're able to have this conversation. And he's wandered into the forest, and he comes across this really kind of cool situation where, because in Commandy's world, the animals are in control, and there aren't that many humans anymore. And so he comes across, throughout like his series, you see the tigers and bears and like how these different animals have created societies and stuff. Well, here he comes across sloths, and they're really creepy. They're worshiping this skeleton with a king's crown on it and this old tattered robe. And they're like, "Welcome, stranger. Do you like our king, our long dead ruler? We worship him. We worship death. Would you like us to worship you? Would you like to be our next king?" And they make him our king, reduce him to bones. So they attack and try to kill Commandy to make him their new king. And Commandy picks up the skeleton and throws it at them. Like, "He lays hands on our ruler. Such daring, such evil. He flings our king. Sad, bad. Our king shatters," because he throws the king against at them, and they duck out of the way, and it smashes against a pile of rocks. But eventually they take him out and knock him out, and they start carrying him away. And then meanwhile, Pyra's ship and the rest of the gang, they've gone into orbit to look for Brother Eye. And they find this heap of slag just kind of floating. And it's basically the status that Brother Eye is in now. And they want to try to figure out a way to reactivate Brother Eye if they think maybe that'll help them deal with what's happened to Commandy. So Pyra reverts to her natural state of a huge ball of fire, and the heat that she gives off melts all the metal encasing Brother Eye, and he says, "Who awakens me?" And so they Pyra tells him that that a generation, they tell him about the situation, and Brother Eye says, "A descendant of Omak is alive. I thought humanity perished in the great disaster." So Brother Eye reactivates himself because he's been dormant for so long. And while that's happening, we go back to Commandy and see that the sloths have hung him up by his ankles above a fire pit. And just in time, before he's going to be lowered into the fire, he gets a beam of power, like a beam of purple light from the clouds comes down and strikes him in the eye symbol on his chest, and it gives him a sudden surge of power. So he's able to swing his torso up and rip his binds down and escape, and he just starts like going nuts on the sloths, and they start freaking out and running away. And then but he gets another beam down from Omak, or from Brother Eye rather, and in space we see Brother Eye tells Commandy's companions, "I have activated the strength and cunning latent in the youth you call Commandy. I am nearly exhausted, but I can do my master's grandchild another favor. I can return him to his normal state. This is best, for my master Omak was an experiment that failed." So Omak guides them to where Commandy's at, and then kind of tells them to leave him in peace. And so they're reunited and everything. And there's an implication that Brother Eye may have given some Commandy some extra strength, but then it ends on a cliffhanger because Arna stumbles out of the spaceship, and she's it's like Commandy says, she's aged 50 years since this born, and she's withered. She looks like she's like 90. And when the whole thing with Arna is that she's from a people who they age really fast, like they only live like 5 years. And what's kind of funny, talking about letters, one of the letters, it says, the last sentence in it says, "Even with all the rounded personalities, I don't like Arna. Aren't her 5 years up yet?"
Jeez.
Yeah. But there's some interesting questions and stuff. Like this other person asks, "Wouldn't Commandy get cold high up in the mountains?" And the answer is just basically, he's a rugged kid. He's tough. He can deal with it. So, yeah, and just like you were talking, the last page is a 100-piece toy soldier set. $1.50, but no, doesn't come with any bugglers.
No bugglers.
Four bazooka men, though.
Let me.
So, yeah, it was cool. I mean, you don't like the. They have the two
That's
Commandy
weird because
collection.
that's 1977. That's 2 years after the one I just read, and it's got the same soldiers being sold.
Yeah, they would sometimes run the ads really long. I mean,
Yeah, it's like 2 years later.
I remember there was that one that was Bazooka Bubblegum, or maybe it was Bubble Yum. I think it might have been Bubble Yum, where it was like the rules of gunfighting, but with bubble gum. And that ran forever. I mean, I remember seeing it when I was a kid, but I've bought issues from like the late 70s and seen it in there. But yeah, it was a cool issue. There's the two collections, hardcover collections of Commandy that collect everything that Jack did, but the issues aren't collected. The ones 41 and on, I think it only ran to what, like 50 something, 53 or 54. But they're real cheap. You can find them really cheap because they're not Kirby, I guess. And
Yeah.
it was a popular comic at the time. At least when Jack was doing it, it was the most popular of his stuff.
Yeah, that it lasted the longest, which is kind of strange, I think. I kind of blows my mind at what failed. Do you know what I mean?
59. It was 59 was the last
Yeah.
issue. So it also has Omak on the cover. Interesting.
Yeah, I think we're gonna see him. There's a lot of Commandees too that have a backup feature, if I remember correctly, with OMAC.
Yeah, this last I'm looking at this last issue, 59, and it has a backup tale that follows the events of the Omak series, and then it because this was the last issue, it the Omak backups moved to Warlord. It says OMAC series would continue in Warlord number 37.
Wow.
So.
Very cool issue. So my next one, I'm going to throw out two names and I'm going to have you try to guess what title is. You only get one guess. All
Okay.
right. So I got Chris Claremont and John Byrne.
X-Men.
That's what no, what I think most people would guess. But this is Marvel Team Up, number 67.
I figured it was a loaded question, but I wanted to play along.
It's a Spider-Man and Tigra, and
Nice.
I really like the Tigra character. That's why I picked this one up. I picked it up fairly recently when I was in Albuquerque. I went back to the first comic book store I used to get it. It's more of a trade bookseller, and I was going through some long boxes. They don't have that many anymore. I had like 10 long boxes, and I found some old Marvel team ups, and I
Nice.
picked and chose what I wanted based on who he teamed up with, and this was Tigra because I really like Tigra, and it had Kraven, so it's kind of like a Kraven story, and it's a cool story because you open up with like Spider-Man, he's re oh nice,
Excuse me.
happy 50th.
Cheers.
He's stressed out about his classes, and he's actually kind of bored. He's like, they've been boring him to tears, and he's been in his apartment. He can't stand it any longer, so he decides to take a swinging stroll out, and Spider Sense detects somebody's watching him. And he's like, well, this guy's an idiot. If he only knew I had spider sense, I'm just going to go back up on him and jump him from the back. It's going to be embarrassing for him. And this is the post that I posted that you commented on where Kraven just, Spider-Man's trying to sneak up from him on the back, and Kraven just throws his fist up backwards and he pummels him. He's like, holy cow, it's Kraven. And Kraven always has given Spider-Man some pretty good fights, and they have a fist fight, and he manages to drug him, like give him some darts and drug him, and then you find him tied up to chains in front of a weird looking fire pit with a really sexy scene where Kraven's like lounging on a weird looking pillow, and he's got a collar around Tigra, and it's like his sex slave. And he's like patting her on the head, which is awesome. And he's like, okay, he's treating her like an animal. And he's like, okay, Tigra, go kill him. And Spider-Man has to try to find a way to fight her while he's chained. And he managed to jar his chains loose and wrap the chains around her neck. And she gets it around. And they end up fighting in the fire and getting smothered. And he notices the necklace has microchips in it, and he wonders to himself, well, maybe this is what's controlling Tigra, because it has those little asterisks, editor's notes, and it says, well, Tigra's been recently appearing in Fantastic Four, and how did she get here, kind of thing, which was kind of cool because it plays into Marvel Team Up didn't really have to be a continuity thing, but it just shows that continuity mattered back then, it lets you know where she was last and where she's going to be after this episode. So they took notes, and then it had like editor's notes on Marvel Chillers, because I own the Marvel Chillers with Tiger too, and I read them with, and it also had Kraven. So it gives the flashback story of how she was hunting Kraven, and Kraven captured her and put the chip around her and was controlling her. And once she snaps out of it, she just wants to beat the shit out of Kraven, but he gasses her again. And they lose Kraven for like a small time, and then they talk about this weird thing in New York that was a safari park that was abandoned, which is really weird because they abandoned all the animals. All these like animals they just left there, And I guess this is where Kraven was hanging out, and he tamed the animals, and they kind of form a stampede to go after Spider-Man and Tigra. And Tigra manages to get on the backs of all these animals, and she's just jumping from animal to animal, and Spider-Man kind of follows her path. And as he's ready to knock out or kill or capture Tigra again, Spider-Man manages to web up like a fastball special, like a baseball size webbing that's really hard, and he like just throws it at Kraven and hits him in the back of the head and knocks him out. And Tigra thanks him for saving her life, and then you know how Kraven has those like I don't know if they're like tiger teeth on his belt. And they usually knock people out if he could get them on people. He like pulls those claws out of his belt, and he's gonna stab Spider-Man, and they think he's knocked out and Tigra, but Spider-Man turns around and he says, "Sit on it, Kraven," and he punches him right in the gut and takes him out. And I guess he's going back to prison, but that's how it ends. But it was a kind of a fun issue. There's some really good John Byrne art in here, and I didn't read a lot of X-Men, believe it or not, because X-Men to me were one of my least favorite teams. So I didn't read a lot of Claremont Byrne X-Men, but this was an enjoyable issue.
Nice.
Done in one, and we're done. And next issue, he faces off against Man-Thing.
Yeah, those team-up series were really cool for that. That's, and like you said, I mean, it was a smaller universe at the time. It was they weren't as publishing as many books, and if you know, so if like a team was in outer space, you know, if like the X-Men were in outer space, then you know they couldn't come to show up and help the Avengers, you know, and they kept track of stuff like that. Because it's probably easier to do because they didn't have as many books to that they published, you know. But
This was from 1977, so the same year that Commandy number 50 came out.
oh, look at that.
There was
That's fun.
no army set ad, but there was a galaxy of Star Wars treasures that you could buy, which I guess they're like transfers that you could put on backpacks, tote bags, and t-shirts and stuff, like iron them on, which was kind of interesting. And like you said, there weren't that many titles coming out because they have a subscription service, and you have Spider-Man, Avengers, Captain America, Captain Marvel, Conan, Daredevil, Defenders, Doctor Strange, Fantastic Four, Howard the Duck, Incredible Hulk, Invaders, Iron Man, Marvel Tales, Marvel Team Up, Marvel 2-in-1, Master of Kung Fu, Power Man, Thor, and Tomb of Dracula, and Spidey Super Stories from the Electric Company.
Nice. Electric Company. I remember that show. Alrighty. So, I've been reading some Marvel Silver Age stuff lately. Every once in a while, I go back and I pick up where I left off with reading the different titles that were around then. I had read the X-Men and Spider-Man around when I got back into comics. One of the things, first things I read was they had come out by then with the Essentials volumes. Because when I was a kid, there really wasn't any way that I could easily go back and read these classic X-Men and Spider-Man Silver Age stories. But those were my two favorites, and so when I got back into comics and found out about the Essentials, I went back and read the X-Men and Spider-Man ones. But that was kind of about it until I got Marvel Unlimited, and so I've been going back periodically and reading a little bit of this and that. So I just kind of read the next thing in line for me, which was the first Fantastic Four annual. It's I think came out in between, I want to say like issues 15 and 16 of the book. And the earlier Fantastic Four issues, they kind of like I feel like the series sort of takes its time to warm up. But I thought this annual was pretty fantastic. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, you get a lot of Submariner early on in Fantastic Four. So when I started to read it, I was like, oh man, Submariner again. I didn't really. I'm.
You're not a fan of his, or
It's not that I'm not a fan. It's just like he keeps showing up earlier on, and there had just been like a couple issues prior a Submariner story, and it's not that like I think I'm just anxious to see the introduction of other characters. I'm, you know, so I'm excited to get to issues where other new ideas are introduced. And so when I f at first it's like, you know, I wasn't super excited, but
do I
the
want to
last,
read this? This is 72 pages.
yeah,
You're hesitant as do I want to read 72 pages of Submariner?
right, exactly. Even though, I mean, I think it's like 38 pages the story, and then there's some back matter and stuff. But yeah, so but it turned out to be a really awesome story. It's Submariner versus the human race, and the last time you'd seen Submariner, he still had not found his people, and he said that he was off to find them. And well, this just jumps right in. He's found them, all right. And he's taken his place as their king. This, of course, is written by Stan Lee and Jack, drawn by Jack Kirby with inks by Dick Ayers. So Namor has taken his place as the king of the Atlanteans, and they are, for the most part, all falling in line with him, all but Warlord Krang, because he's not excited to see Namor back, because he was the one that, before Namor returned, that was going to take his place, not only as the ruler, but as the groom of Lady Dorma. And now that Namor is back, Dorma has no interest in him, so he's not happy to see Namor. And it's funny because like all the other Atlanteans, they're pretty fully dressed, but you know, Namor, like, he has a look and he's sticking with it. And so as King Namor, he just puts a crown on, and he wears this like cape over his shoulders, but otherwise, like, he's still rocking the green underwear and nothing else. So I thought that was kind of amusing.
Probably felt like an underwater guy had no reason to wear clothes.
Yeah, I it just kind of stands out because all the other Atlanteans,
They
they're
have all the armor and the blue, right?
yeah they're and they're blue skinned, and it's not, you know, when you first start reading this issue, it's just it sort of stands out that they're all blue and he's not. But they do end up explaining that in the story. So from there, we switched to the Fantastic Four, and I think one of the things that made this so enjoyable is that they're Lee and Kirby are really starting to get a feel for the characters and their personalities. And Thing, especially, was making me laugh out loud with his dialogue, and the things that he says. I mean, and a tip, you know, something that's become iconic for the team, Johnny Storm is messing with the Thing, because the Thing's in a room trying to write a letter to the Yancey Street Gang. It's like, let's see now, dear Yancey Street Gang, drop dead. Nah, that's too subtle. I gotta think of something real sharp. And then he's imagining, maybe I could just put myself in a sack and mail myself to Yancey Street. Then when I get my paws on those corn balls, look out. But he's noticing it's getting hotter and hotter in there, and it's because Johnny is blowing flame through a vent into the room. So finally, it gets way too hot in there, and he figures out what's going on. He starts chasing, and as we see many times throughout the years, the thing and the Human Torch go at each other and create like all kinds of damage. While Sue Storm is trying to get him to stop and yelling in the background, but the thing grabs a fire hose off the wall and starts spraying water all over the place, trying to put out the torch. And like, let's see how long you can dodge this, you blister-brained brat. And finally, Mr. Fantastic puts an end to it by stringing Johnny up in a asbestos net, and he rolls the thing up in himself. Basically, he like flattens himself out and like and rolls himself around the thing till it cool down. But the Fantastic 60s characterization of Sue Storm, she's like, oh no, look what they've done. My clothes, my expensive Dior and Saks Fifth Avenue dresses ruined. Look at them. Sob.
She was
And
such a different character back then.
I know. And Mr. Fantastic says, don't, Sue, I'll make it up to you, honey. You can't read. They were all original, exclusive creations, sob. Men, you're all beasts. So, hijinks over with. The team ends up going on vacation. They go on a cruise, and Alicia Masters comes along with them. And, we see Alicia and Ben. They're lounging on deck chairs, and Ben, because of his appearance and everything like that, he's got a hoodie on and sunglasses and pants and shoes. And Johnny's walking around, and he goes to find Reed and Sue, and they're at the swimming pool, and they're telling him, "Hey, have you checked out the food on the place yet?" Like trying to get him to leave him alone. But then all of a sudden he sees a sea serpent in the sea, and he's like, "Holy crap, Ben, quick, there's some kind of monster out there." So the Fantastic Four go off to try to take care of this sea serpent that they saw, and they get in this little ship or this little like dinghy to go out to where they saw where Johnny saw the monster. And then all of a sudden they're wrapped up in this kind of like transparent bag, and it sucks them down beneath the water, so there's air inside so they can breathe. But
Hello? Think I lost them.
people, hello.
I gotcha. I just went out for 2 seconds.
Okay. So yeah, we have Namor. He's planning on going and attacking the surface people, and you really have like a love triangle. At this time, there's a lot of focus being put on the love triangle between Namor and Mr. Fantastic and Sue Storm, and they were really trying to play up that she was trying to decide between the two. And so Namor immediately says to her, "You, my dear Neard, fear nothing. You are and always shall be under my royal." Brother, I hates Marvel Comics. Are you there?
Yeah, you were saying under the royal protection, and then it hung up.
Okay. Yeah, so Namor, he's hitting on Sue, and but Sue rejects his protection because, so if you're not going to protect the rest of the Fantastic Four, then I don't want your protection. And Mr. Fantastic says, "For the moment, I'll disregard what you said to Sue. But how do we know? How did you know we were on that ship, Namor?" So at this time, Namor has a whole bunch of different weird, wacky fish that he's in control of. Like Stan and Jack were just, instead of using normal fish, they were inventing all these weird fish. And he has this telefish that he uses to spy, because its eyes are like projectors. So the funny thing is, like, almost this is almost like Throne of Atlantis, like 50 years earlier, because the Atlanteans are attacking New York and trying to, and Mr. Fantastic goes before the United Nations, and he's trying to bolster the world's armies to get support to tell them about the Atlanteans, and a lot of people don't believe them. Like there's a Soviet ruler who says, "Bah, it's all a pack of capitalistic lies. No matter what the democracies say, I vote nyet, nyet, nyet." And he's smacking his shoe on the counter. But they have like a scientific expert that talks about Homo romanus, and he's got a skull, and how it's kind of interesting that he goes into this whole history of how there was a mammal that returned to the sea and is known as Homo romanus. And he go there's this whole breakdown of their society and this undersea civilization, and we see shots throughout the history and the development of Atlantis. And that in the 1920s, Homo sapiens made their first contact with Homo romanus. That this ship that was shooting the depth charges to destroy an iceberg actually caused damage to Atlantis, and created this kind of history of enmity. But similar to another seafaring superhero, a human male fell in love with a female from Atlantis, and because it's the 1960s, they get married, but and they conceive a child, and it's Prince Namor. This funny, this surprising moment where all of a sudden it turns out that this expert that's explaining all this stuff, he pulls off his jacket and shirt, like rips off all his clothes and pulls a mask off, and it's actually Namor. And he jumps off the podium and says, "I declare war upon the human race," and jumps out. He flies out the window, and Mr. Fantastic's arms falling after him, trying to catch up to him. But so this is where like the war really starts, where all these Atlantean ships dock and unload all these Atlantean warriors, and they have this neat design where they have helmets on that are filled with water so that they can breathe on land. So naturally, like the Fantastic Four go to work battling the armies, trying to defend New York. And meanwhile, Namor is making speeches on television, and the Earth armies are mobilizing to try to combat the Atlanteans. While the Fantastic Four are trying to put together some one of Reed's inventions, to they're trying to move it to the top of a skyscraper. This like large Kirby technology device that the rest of the Fantastic Four, they're not really sure what it's going to do. But once they finally get it together and turn it on, there's this like strange hum that goes up over all over of the city, and the Atlantean soldiers start grabbing their head and writhing in pain, And what Reed's doing actually is evaporating the water from their helmets. So they all start freaking out and running as fast as they can back to the sea so that they can breathe. And Namor immediately knows who's responsible for it. So he freaks out, goes flying to find Mr. Fantastic, and he grabs him and tries to smash him against the wall, but obviously it's Mr. Fantastic, so he just kind of like accordions himself, and they have this really funny battle where he accordions back out and then turns himself into a ball and is like bouncing around the room, and Namor is trying to catch him, and finally he does, and he drops back down to the floor, and he grabs part of Mr. Fantastic with his foot and turns him into like a punching bag. And he's just like going to town on him until the rest of the Fantastic Four show up.
Is it doing any damage to him or no? I'm punching rubber.
He looks like a little bit like when the other Fantastic Four show up, he turns back to his normal form and is laying on the ground. And he seems like a little bit, but not too damaged. But eventually Namor grabs Sue and flies out the window, takes her with him, and goes back to his ship, where he's abducted her. And at first, so he's back with Krang and Dorma, and at first they think that he just grabbed one of them as a hostage. But eventually they catch on that Sue wasn't a random choice. There's another battle where the other three, they go after Namor's ship and fight at sea. But while this is going on, Krang is watching through a periscope, and he catches on that Namor is more concerned about Sue than just using as a hostage. And so when Dorma gets wind of this, she's like, "No, there's no way. You're not going to come between me and Namor, Surface Girl. I'll destroy you first." So she grabs this long pole and smashes out one of the windows so that the sub will start flooding with water, trying to drown Sue. And they're so far underwater that she probably has no chance, but she just swims out of the hole that's been created just as like a last ditch effort. But fortunately, in the battle between the other three and Namor and the Thing end up sinking downward into the water, and they spot Sue. So since they both have a reason to save her, they stop fighting, and Thing is able to detach her from the kelp that she's trapped in, and he lets Namor swim her up to the surface because Namor's so fast, and he knows Namor's deal with her, that he's not gonna let her die. So he gets her back to the surface, and Sue is in pretty bad shape. They don't know if she's gonna make it. She needs immediate medical attention. So Namor goes back to his ship, and he swims in there. He's like, "Dorma, Krang, get out of here. Take the crew with you. I need no more weight than necessary on here." She's like, "You can't speak to me like that, even if you are the king. I have royal blood as well." And this is where they really get upset, because his whole reason for doing this is to save Sue. So he totally pisses off the Atlanteans, and they do get Sue to safety. She recovers, but as the story ends, Namor is back to a man without a country, basically. The surface dwellers hate him. Everybody knows about him because he tried to take over the earth. But when he goes back to find the Atlantean people, they have all abandoned him. So he says, "Is there never to be a place for me on the surface or in the sea?" But yeah, it was a really cool story.
Are you reading all the way from the beginning then to now? Are you reading it in sequential order or what?
I have been reading sequential. I mean, I don't know how much farther I'll get before my attention shifts again, but every once in a while I'll pick up where I left off. And I've been reading a lot of like Fantastic Four, Journey into Mystery, Tales of Suspense and stuff like that lately. So, and I'll keep reading sequentially until, however long I'm continue to be interested. But yeah, I mean, as for the rest of the annual, there's like a pin-up page for each of the different villains that the Fantastic Four have faced so far up to this point. There's a page for each. Then there's like a expanded edition of the story from Amazing Spider-Man number one, where Spider-Man goes to try to get a job with the Fantastic Four. And they talk about how it was just a short little episode in that issue, and we've received countless requests asking us to redo this famous encounter, but to devote more space to it. So this is actually, it says, by special arrangement with Spider-Man magazine, where this episode by Lee and Ditko first appeared in condensed form. And it's actually, but this time it's actually drawn by Jack Kirby with Steve Ditko inks. And really, like, the expansion is just that it's a longer battle between Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four. But it starts and ends the same way. And then there's like a neat double page spread of questions and answers about the Fantastic Four. And I just wanted to mention a couple of them because it was kind of amusing. They have favorite hobbies for each one of them. And Reed's are science, inventing, and crime deduction. Johnny's are sports cars, jazz records, and girls, though not necessarily in that order. Here we go again with Sue. Favorite hobbies: fashions, cooking, cosmetics, and reading romance novels.
Damn,
I know.
it's
And
so not her. It's
I know.
just,
It's so like stereotypical too.
yeah. Every time I think of fashion and superheroes, I always think of Janet, the Wasp. Because
Yeah,
she's
that's
always
more.
changing her costume and she's always wearing a different dress and
And that's more stayed with her characterization too. Yeah, there's another thing with her is if she marries, would she leave the Fantastic Four? And the answer is, your guess is as good as ours. It will probably depend upon whom she marries. And they have, who does she really love, Reed or Submariner? And they have a little picture of her with a looking at like a portrait of both of them. We ourselves are honestly not sure. No one can really look into the heart of a female, and we suspect that she herself isn't certain. It's so bad. So bad, Stan. But Ben's hobbies are weightlifting, reading adventure stories, and wisecracking. And they ask,
I always thought it was weird that the street gang would always like infuriate him so much. Yancey Street, that was the one part I always thought was just bizarre. 'Cause why are these street thugs even in the same league as the thing? You know what I mean?
It's good for laughs though, that's for sure.
It is.
They say that Johnny's 16 years old. And they keep asking questions about their costumes, and the answer every time is unstable molecules. And they ask, why is Mr. Fantastic's hair white at the temples? Is he older than he looks? And they say, no, it turned white during the Second World War when he aided Allied prisoners to escape from the Nazis.
Damn, he's
So I thought
old.
that was interesting. I know that was what they're like, no, he's not old. He his
They
hair
just
turned white in the Second World War.
by just saying that, they aged him 20 years, because this is the 60s, and the World War was in the 40s, so they really aged him.
The interest.
If he was 20 in World War, one or two, sorry,
Two,
then he's already looking in his 40s. Do you know what I
right.
mean?
He would be in his
That
40s,
answer just aged him. No, he's not old. Don't
I
worry
guess.
about him. And he's did it say how old Sue is?
No, it didn't. No.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, I know. When
Because I always thought, especially in earlier, it's like, why is she with this old fucker? You know, he's always smoking a pipe. He
Yeah.
always looks like an old dude. Why is she even with him?
One thing I kind of find interesting about the earlier issues is that I think they initially intended Reed to be more of like the sex symbol than Johnny, 'cause earlier on, like, he's treated more like the kid, and he's not like, he doesn't have that like Playboy aspect to him that he has later
Yeah,
on.
like the Hugh
And
Hefner pipe.
right, and like, and yeah, and like Mr. Fantastic, I think he was supposed to be like attractive in like a distinguished gentleman kind of way, like the fifth, like more of like the 50s movies where you had like certain actors that were sex symbols well into like their 40s and 50s. And because like there's an issue where the Fantastic Four, like they're showing, like they like to show how they're the celebrities, and Mr. Fantastic is the one that has like a female fan club. There's all these women that are like are fawning over him and talking about how handsome he is, and no one really cares about Johnny. He's just like, he flies off and he's like, this is stupid. Like, he just, you know, he's like acting like a kid where he doesn't really have that interest yet. And yeah, it's just kind of interesting how that's changed a lot,
Yeah.
and what has kind of become established as like as the iconic versions of the characters. But
So my last comic is Shadow Man Volume 2, number 16 and 17, which was not Jack Boniface. It was Zero, Michael LeRoy. And it was more towards the video game-ish. This was the Acclaim years. The reason I chose these is I was listening to Ivar's Longbox from Valiant Central, and they do like a random comic review. Like Derek Howard back in the day, when I fell in love with comic book noise, it was kind of like my first podcast. He would do this weird thing called the random comic book review, which he basically random number generated some random comic to get to. Like I could never do this because I can never get to all my long boxes. The drawer boxes, yes, but I still have the bulk of the collection in real long boxes, which means they're stacked on top of each other and you'd have to unstack them to get to them. But the Ivar's long box is to take a random Valiant comic and read it out of context. And it interests me in that when they talked about it, they said this was they had talked about issue 17, but I read 16, which was the first issue by this creative team, Claremont and Clayton Crane. And what interests me is this was Clayton Crane's second work that they talked about. And the first work is the issue before it. So I wanted to see what Clayton Crane's art looks like, because Clayton Crane has that very painted style. You know, he did X-Force and he did like Carnage and he's doing Rye now. And I wanted to see what it looked like when he first started. So I was like really curious about that. The other thing that got me really curious is who's this Serge Claremont? I never heard of him before. And they said that he was a Haitian, which made me even want to read it even more, because as a Haitian, you know, where voodoo originated was like Haiti. So I wanted to that I said that's got to be an interesting perspective. When they reviewed it, they didn't like it that much, and they said they didn't get the voodoo references at all. And I can see why they didn't, because 17 didn't introduce that, but 16 did, and it did it really well. There was this voodoo priest, and it's weird jumping into a story like on issue 16 and not remembering it all that well. Like I knew it was Zero, but I didn't remember why it was Zero and not Boniface, and you know it was very different. But it opens up with Pierre Jean. He's a how do they say it? A Hung a Hungan, Master, which is a Hungan. It's a voodoo
How's it
priest.
spelled?
Hungan. It's a voodoo term for like a priest.
Okay.
He's one of those, and the way this story opens up, it's like he's a bad guy because he's taking out Zero. He's like stabbing him in the chest, and he's at this time the Shadow Mask. You know the mask that Shadow Man. It's like engraved in his chest. It's like part of his chest, and he pulls it out and essentially kills him. But it gives like the legacy. It says it started off with Maxim Saint James, Cole Cardo, Jack Boniface, and now Michael LeRoy, who's Zero. So he takes the Shadow Man power away, and then you see Nettie, which is, if you go back to classic Shadow Man, she was the one that helped Shadow Man early on, and you find out later that she was a spider alien that gave him the Shadow Man powers. But in here, the way this story starts off, it sounds like she's trying to rescue Jack. So you're like, well, she's the good guy, and this guy, Papa Pierre, is the bad guy, or Pierre Jean. But it's inverted. Nitty is the bad guy. She took one of Shadow Man's girlfriends and took the body of her, so she looks very young. And they get into a big old voodoo battle, which is really, really cool. For his art being like this is his first work, it's really awesome, Clayton Crane's work. And it's different in the fact that like Clayton Crane, you can look at his work now and you say, is that Clayton Crane? Like it's very unique style that you could say he's formed his own, whereas back then he looked very much like an image artist. You know, like something like McFarlane or Jim Lee, kind of that kind of school. Actually, more towards McFarlane look, you know, which I thought served the book really, really well. But it has a cool voodoo battle. There was a cool ad here, which was for Man of the Atom, The Rebirth of Solar, a trade paperback, which had three wise men looking at the star, and it's the symbol of solar. I thought that was quite interesting. But then it goes to like these a bunch of mercenaries working for a corporation, and it's Orb Industries. So if you remember Orb Industries, I believe that's the where Arik from XO used to have his facility. He was the ambassador. Well, now Orb Industries is more in the Shadow Man genre, and it's being run by this one guy who they never even mention, but they keep mentioning Ma California, which is a pretty sexy female. It's like she seems like she's a bad priestess for the voodoo, but she's sending these orb mercenaries after Zero, and Zero actually comes back to life and kills them all. And his power is he could absorb their death and become more powerful. So as if he kills six mercenaries, he absorbs their spirit, which is a lot different than Jack, if I remember correctly. And then there's a flashback scene to the girl that actually was in he kind of disposes of Nettie, and there's a cool scene introducing the villain, and a good summary of the history of Shadow Man, which originally originated in African as African warriors, and they kind of dissipated during the slavery years when they brought the Shadow Man over. They've kind of like lost their power, but and then they gained the power back when Nitti got the mask and started to give it to her Shadow Man champions. So you could see the legacy of Shadow Man, which I really really enjoyed. And then Michael LeRoy used to work with a detective called Personaphone. I don't even know how to pronounce that name. PERSEPHONE. Persephone?
it's Persephone,
That's a weird name.
yeah.
But that used to be the detective that used to work, and he walks in and finds out that she was like mutilated. She's got like pens stuck in her chest, and her face was stapled. It's really a brutal scene. And somebody had killed her, and he finds out it's that California Ma, and he goes to get vengeance against California Ma. And there's these zombie core that go after him, and I really enjoyed it. And then it concludes in the second issue where California Ma kind of kills Pierre Jean, which I thought was the bad guy in the first issue, but turns out he was the good guy trying to help Shadow Man without the mask. And he's like, that mask was really the mask that was embedded in your chest was really weighing you down. It was put there as to taper your powers, not to use your full abilities. So now that the mask is gone, he's a lot more powerful. But there's a cool scene in there where he fights California Ma and gets his ass kicked for the most part, but gets away. And then she later kills that voodoo priest that was helping him, and then it's continued in future issues. But this guy Serge Claremont did a really, if this is his first comic book work and his only work, I thought he did a really good job.
That's
like
cool.
like it's it doesn't read like an amateur, at least for me. It read like he gave me enough in that first issue to give me the whole legacy of the Shadow Man, to set the stage of the voodoo priest and Nati, and it also introduced California Ma really well, and the situation that they're in, and Orb Industries, which is this real rich organization that's tapped into technology and stuff, but they're using the dead side, which is very interesting. So yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I thought Clayton Crane's art, and he used to spell his name differently. Instead of spelling it with C's like he does now, he spelled it with K's. So,
Interesting.
yeah, it was good. It was a good issue. I'm glad I picked him up, and I have three more to read before the series actually concludes. But I am going to finish them this weekend. The other three, actually two. I only have two left.
That Persephone, that might be an illusion because Persephone is a goddess in Greek mythology.
No, but she in this comic, she's a detective.
No, but I mean the it might be an intentional illusion, like the choosing that name for the character. They
Oh.
might be making an allusion to,
The goddess.
yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
Maybe
Daughter
she
of,
won't be dead, is what you're saying.
yeah, daughter of Zeus and the harvest goddess Demeter. Well, I mean, they might not be saying that she is Persephone, really. They might just be like using that name to make some like connections to the goddess in terms of like thematically. You know, like just using that name to call to mind the goddess and some things
Right.
about and some things about like you might find that there's things about the character that are in common or whatever. So
That was a really brutal scene that was drawn because she was killed, but it was like she was killed with what was ever in the office. Do you know what I mean? The person took all the pens and just stabbed them in her heart, and then had a staple gun and stapled her face. It was a brutal scene.
Yeah, she's like the queen of the underworld, so maybe
Yeah.
there's some kind of like, and Shadow Man has to do a lot with like death, and
Yeah, Deadside, and
so they might be like.
they have this cool area of the Deadside called the Boneyard, where there's just like these bones everywhere, and it does go off. Like I read the next issue, even 18 after it, and there's some scenes in there that really confuse the hell out of me, because he ends up getting away with what is his girlfriend currently, and they end up escaping to the dead side, and then they have like this, as soon as they get in the dead side, they don't know who they are and they separate, and it gets really weird. But I don't know if I got really confused in that issue, or if once I read the next issue, if it'll clarify some of that. But yeah, it's good
Maybe.
stuff. I really enjoyed reading these old issues of, these are from 1998. Not at the area of Acclaim's demise yet, but it's getting ready to the cancellation of Volume 2, and then there's plenty of other Shadow Man. There's a Volume 3, and there's a Deadside series, and there's other books that, they played a lot with Shadow Man, because I think he did have some success in the video game realm. Not as much success as Turok, but he did have more success, like the XO, because the XO game was pretty much XO and Iron Man. I think Shadow Man had more of a first player type feel to it. I never played it, but it looked like it was pretty good.
Yeah, me neither. I remember seeing ads for it though.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that was all from me. I knew the Fantastic Four story was long, and that I knew that we had a lot of questions from William, so
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, and
figure
thank
that
you
would
for the
do it.
questions. That was a good 50th segue into the episode.
Yeah, thanks for doing 50 episodes with me. Hopefully we'll have another 50 more.
Yeah, hopefully more than that. Hopefully we're going to be old men in our 90s and we're still talking retro, which will be retro in the 2000s.
We'll be talking like about how we went back and reread some New 52.
Yeah. Oh, this new Superman was awesome. Comics aren't like they used to be.
Remember when Superman got the solar flare power for the first
Yeah.
time or whatever it was, and
Where he could go supernova and release all his energy and then became a human.
remember
Matt, do you remember that? That was so cool.
that crazy story?
Yeah.
It's like remember when comics were only $4?
We come with our one, we only bought one comic this month because it was $150, 20 pages of comic.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com, and Twitter's is at MythMakingETC, at Mike Myers Brunch, and you're still doing your Kid Flash episodes and posting them on the Facebook page, which is Geek Brunch Podcast, and they can also get it at your website, right? MythMakingETC.com.
Yeah, it's kind of like I post links to this show too, and it's just kind of like a one-stop shop if you're looking for anything I've been doing on comics.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'll have a new episode of From Kid to Flash released tomorrow, episode 9. So.
Very cool. And you can find me on DC Noise, Geek Brunch Retro, and Valiant Podcast. And I'm also doing another Valiant comic book podcast called Valiant Versus. That one's a lot of fun because I get to look at every incarnation of the character and then see
Yeah,
which one I like the
explain what
most.
that is, because it's a neat idea, I think.
What I did with the first episode and is look at every volume of Exo Man of War. So I read Volume 1, Volume 2, Volume 3. I not only look at the time, the books themselves, but I compare and contrast the books, and I also look at like what pop culture was during that year. So like I let people know like what the top movies were, what the top TV shows were, what the top music was, like the Billboard's Hot 100 during that 1 month. Which is very interesting. I realized that as I get later in the years that I don't like music as much. I don't know why that is, but it's fun. It's fun for me to do to dig in that old Valiant long box and pull something out and talk about it.
Yeah, I figured you should explain it because someone listening to this, even if they're not a huge Valiant fan, might have some crossover appeal to retro, you know,
Yeah, and
because part of it's retro.
in future things, I might be comparing it to other books too. Do you know what I mean? Like, I might take like Dr. Mirage and compare it to another type of love story. Do you know what I mean? And see how it compares. But
That's cool.
yeah, I'm kind of freewheeling it. But
That's
that's
okay.
the intent of it. I'll probably do it like monthly, or if I'm lucky, twice a month. So yeah, thanks for being with us for 50 issues. I know we have a few really loyal listeners that enjoy this podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, it's a fun podcast to do, and it's one of my most it of all the podcasts we do, the when I get to prepare for it, it's the one I enjoy the most, 'cause it's kind of like just randomly finding a long box and figuring out what I'm going to read. That's how I prepare for it. And I try to pick, books that are different. But I do revisit a lot because, like, you get hooked on the Tomb of Dracula, and I'll get hooked on John Sable, and I kind of want to see it to, completion.
I mean it's fun to choose stuff to read because there's a variety there and you do have the things that you go back to, but we both, I think, try to keep enough new stuff to keep the topics fresh. And unlike planning for From Kid to Flash, it's all like I know what I'm reading, you know. It's there's no surprises there, and it's nice to be able to okay, I'm kind of in the mood to do this or just to try different things and keep the topics varied. So alrighty.
Emails at mythmaking at gmail.com and Mike at comicbooknoise.com.
Yes,
So,
mythmaking etc.
yeah.
Gmail. And I think that covers it then.
Okay, you have a good one, Chris, and I'll have to talk to you about our next episode because I think I'm going to be out of town.
Okay. Well, yeah,
So,
we'll work it out.
yeah. We can either move it a week early or move it a week forward.
Okay. I'll
Yeah,
take a look at
so
the calendar.
think about it. All right, well, I'll talk to you later. Have a good weekend.
Okay, you too.
Bye.
Adios.
Oh, what you gonna do? You wanna get down? Tell me. Oh, what you gonna do? Do you wanna get down? Oh, what you gonna do? You wanna get down? Oh, what you gonna do? You wanna get down? Tell me.
Get down on it. By standing on the wall,
get your back up off the wall.
Tell me, how you gonna do it if you really don't wanna dance? By standing on the wall,
get your back up off the wall.
Well, I heard all the people saying,
get down on it,
come on in,
get down on
if
it.
You really want it,
get down on it,
you gotta be.